Welcome to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Our special guest today is Elizabeth Bonadonna from the Buffalo, New York region. She is the president of Busy Beaver Lawn and Garden. And I have seen Elizabeth's name just popping up all over the place on social media and at conferences. And so I don't know if she's like the new hottest speaker on the circuit or what, but I'm really excited to have Elizabeth as our guest today. And I have a whole list of exciting topics to talk about. So Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right, Buffalo. Talk to us about Buffalo. What kind of snow do you get in Buffalo? How much snow do you get in Buffalo?
Oh, we get lots. We get just shy of 100 inches on average. So
what?
Some years we get a little bit more than 100 inches, and some years, you know, we're averaging about 93 inches of snow.
Wow. How much of that is lake effect versus like system? Do you know?
That's a really good question. I would say maybe like 30 to 50% could be from lake effect. The beauty with Buffalo is, you know, we just get a lot of snow naturally just from all the moisture. But then we get, you know, like last year we had three back to back. We had pretty much our entire season of snow fall in 4 weeks. So it was like three back to back major storms that were over 20 inches. So it was really crazy. So that was all lake effect. So I guess it depends on the season. Yeah. Sometimes it's really just, you know, you get 1 or 2 inches, but you're getting that sometimes every day. So then you get like the bigger snowstorms that really hit, you know, sometimes we get, you know, 2 or 3 feet in the matter of days. So then, you know, that's a pretty good chunk of your season.
That's a nice storm. Yeah. So that does the lake ever, and we're talking about what lake are we talking about?
Lake Erie.
Okay. So just so everyone is oriented, get out your map and look where Buffalo is. So you're right in the edge of the eastern edge of Lake Erie there. So does Lake Erie freeze over and then the lake effect stops, or does that never happen?
So it's very rare that the lake does freeze over, unfortunately. I think with global warming, you know, being so like prevalent, basically the lake doesn't freeze. So when it's on the verge of freezing, we'll get like a thaw, and then it just kind of delays the process. And so no, unfortunately, we really don't get to that point unless if we have like a whole month of very deep freezing temperatures. And that would be more towards February. February is usually our coldest month. Mm-hmm. And that's the, you know, once March hits, then you have that, you know, 40 degree days, the sun's out, then it freezes at night. So it doesn't really get that opportunity to stay consistent and cold enough to freeze.
Got it. Now, are there certain bands like, you know, the northern part of the city gets twice as much as the southern part, or is it pretty consistent across the region there?
You know, so that's a really good question. We have the north towns, the, you know, central areas, and then what we call south towns, which is like Hamburg and, you know, those deeper south of the region. So the south towns tend to get more snow, and they definitely get the bands more often than not. But some seasons that those bands fluctuate based on the different, what do they call it now? You know, just the different weather, whatever it is, where it's like the pressures and stuff. Because sometimes
the oscillations, right?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we do have areas that are the typical snow belts, which is like, you know, the metro area like Buffalo, Cheektowaga, Lancaster, and then the north towns like Amherst, Williamsville, and even like the Niagara Falls area. Those don't get as much snow. But some seasons, those those areas do get more snow than the mid or the southern areas.
Sounds like you just got to be ready.
Exactly.
You got to be ready to go. I mean, if you're getting 100 inches and you're getting lake effect, you better be ready. 20.
Yeah. Majority of the area gets, you know, the same amount of snow, but, you know, some areas you'll get like 5 to 10 inches more. It really just depends on the season. And, you know, the slogan Buffalo is, well, it's Buffalo. You never know what can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you a native?
Of course. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Lancaster, which is more of like the eastern part. So it's about 20 minutes outside of Buffalo.
Okay. All right. That's cool. So I'm always interested in kind of people where they came from. So I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, your upbringing and kind of like, even like kind of early before you got into business, you know, and then I want to hear about the company as a whole, and then we're going to talk about snow. Okay. That's kind of the roadmap for today. So, I like this question. And so I'm interested, what was your first paid job?
So I had two. It was called Greenfields Nursing Home. So I was considered the wait staff. So I would serve the elderly dinner. So their dinner hours were from like 4 to 7, 7:30. So I'd come in and prepare like the appetizer soups. And it was pretty much like waitressing, but without, you know, waiting on tables and getting tips. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of, you know, working with a bunch of like friends. So it was really
high school,
fun.
High school age.
Yeah, this was during high school. And then I had a second job as well during high school, was at Hollister, the clothing store.
So it was
kind of more short lived just to make extra money during my senior year at the clothing store. But I stayed on the like the wait staff at the nursing home for several years, which then turned into, you know, real waitressing for almost 10 years.
Okay. All right. What else were you into in high school?
So I majored in art and design. So that was something that I was always passionate about, was learning about the different art. And you
carried that into college too, right?
Yeah. So then in college, it was more of a minor. I switched my major in college to science.
What kind of science?
So I started studying, when I first started college, I started studying physical therapy. So I got the PTA degree, which is like an associate's in applied science. And then I wanted to continue on to get my doctorate in physical therapy. So during that process of getting my doctorate, I was doing the undergrad. And it was really tough. The schooling was extremely tough. And at some point I met Chris and I was still in college. And, you know, I had the opportunity to, you know, pursue the doctorate portion, which would have been another 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And what kind of turned me off from it was the fact that, you know, there's 300 something kids applying to be, you know, in the doctorate program.
Yeah.
And they only accept 136 students.
I've heard that across the country. Those are tough programs to get into.
They are. And they said, even if you have a 4.0, your chances of getting in are still really hard. So at that point, you know, I'd already kind of started working with Chris on like the landscaping, snow plowing, when it was in the DBA version. So then that's when I kind of started transitioning into business, because I saw the different opportunities, especially with the amount of money you can generate. Whereas physical therapy, I still loved and had a passion for it. But then I was like, well, if my starting salaries at $40,000 or $50,000 and I have $200,000 in debt, you know, I started doing the math and then I realized if I can sell, you know, hundreds and thousands of dollars for, you know, snow contracts and landscape, you know, it sounded the amount of debt you get into with business, it seemed like you can kind of dig yourself out faster if you structure it right than basically, you know, capping yourself at a degree and not being able to, you know, really reach your potential.
Yeah, that was really wise. So you mentioned Chris. Who is Chris?
So Chris is my fiance. We've been together for 10 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a brother named Nick also, who's the third partner of the company.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're all in cahoots.
Yes.
All right. How does that work?
Right. I mean, we basically consider ourselves our own family-owned business. So we put like a different twist on our own family owned version. Whereas when people think of family owned company, they think of you know, a mom and dad starting it and passing it on to their kids. We have taken a different approach where, you know, we've started this all from scratch. We weren't given it by anyone. And obviously we have a different dynamic where, you know, me and Chris are, you know, dating in a relationship and his brother is also a part of it, but we have a really cool dynamic. You know, all three of us specialize in our own thing, our own division, I guess you can say, our own strengths. So I think that really balances out versus all three of us being really good at the same thing.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's a really good lead into to just hearing about the company as a whole. So kind of fill us in, like some people on the, you know, listening might not know specifically what your company is all into. So kind of walk us through kind of the big picture of all the different things that Busy Beaver's into, because Busy Beaver's been busy.
Yes. Yeah, we earn our name for sure. So we do landscaping services, so anything from maintenance contracts, construction builds. So we do the 3D designs, and then we also can build those designs to real life. And then obviously we do the commercial snow and ice management. We used to do residential snow plowing, but after the Snowvember event, which was in 2014, where we had that 7 feet of snow, we decided, I think it's just really difficult to cater to those driveways when you have a lot of liability and risk hanging over you. And one of the newer part of our business is the retail. We've always had a small retail, but we took over Zittle's Country Market last year in October. So we've basically celebrated a year anniversary with our newer location. So we've really taken our retail and, you know, 10 times it, because taking over an existing company has really flourished for us, because instead of trying to start it all from scratch and really, you know, spend all that time and effort into marketing and, you know, offering the different things, you know, we already offered those goods and they didn't do services. So we already offered most of those goods. We actually added on to that, like the bulk items, the trees and the shrubs. And now we have the service department that we can offer to the community in Hamburg as well.
Yeah, that's great. And it looks like, you know, I'm not super familiar with Buffalo, but it looks like the market is in a really good location too.
Yeah, so it's in the Hamburg area, which is considered that South Town region. And it's better than where we were. We were in Cheektowaga for a few years because it was more central. But, you know, obviously it's different demographics. People have bigger plots of land. It's just all in all a really good area, and we're on a main highway. So It's been nothing but a positive change for us.
Well, I'll tell you what I see on social media is just beautiful. I love all the colors. I love the displays, the signage. It just has such a cool feel. I'm talking about your retail location, of course.
Thank you.
It is just beautiful. So
thank you.
What a great move. But, you know, that adds so much complexity to a business, right? You already have landscape operations, you have snow, now you have this whole retail thing going on. Like, how are you, and you talked about strengths, and so where do you focus your time? Where is Chris focused? Where does Nick focus?
Yeah, so it's a lot of struggle. I don't even want to say a little bit of a struggle, because the retail is very demanding because there's a lot of decisions that have to get made, a lot of ordering. And we have a lot of perishable items because we sell produce. So, you know, trying to make smart moves, and especially this year with inflation, we've had some struggles with that, but I think every company is experiencing that. So I don't think I'm speaking any new language with that.
Right.
So my time, is probably about 50-50, to be fair. Because our, you know, obviously we have the field and the landscape stuff, you know, so there's always a lot of moving parts in the office. I think I've still spent more than 50% with the service side, but I'm trying to divide it 50-50. So this way we are making appropriate decisions with pricing and structure. And Chris, I would say he spent a lot of his time on the retail because he's definitely very passionate about, you know, the produce. You know, he used to work for a big company. It's called Niagara County Produce. So he actually, one of his, you know, first jobs was, he ended up being a manager there. So he had a big, a lot of experience, but a big passion for, you know, the fresh produce, offering that to the community. Nick's pretty much most of his time spent with like mechanics or field stuff. Very seldom of his time is focused on the retail, because his skill set's definitely more of like, you know, logistics, planning, equipment, things like that.
Got it. And then who takes the lead on snow?
Me and Chris, I would say. Okay. Chris loves snow, so he is very passionate about snow sales. I only like snow for
You hate snow.
I do. I used to love snow when it wasn't my career, because I'd go to the ski slopes, but now that's my career. It's, you know, it's a lot of sleepless nights, and sometimes I feel like snow is like a thankless job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure you know, snow is very tough. But yeah, Chris, he gets very excited for it, until, you know, the snow falls, and obviously.
Like, well, sure. You know, you just can't help it. I mean, I always ask people that question in the industry, because people just naturally love it or hate it. Like, I love snow. Ever since I was a kid, I couldn't wait till it snowed. I just loved being in it. I loved everything about running operations. It was so satisfying. And I've seen so many people who didn't like snow just fall in love with it. And it gets in their blood, and they're like just super excited about the opportunity to, you know, knock it out and do something really cool for their community and for, you know, it's the emergency service adrenaline rush. And especially if you're good at it, like if you have a good setup, you have good people, yes, good equipment, and you can just crush it every night and just look around and go like, yeah, we did that. And it just feels good. It just feels really good. It's rewarding. Now, it can also drive you crazy when things break and when the snow comes at the wrong time and the customers are insane. And so there's all that. But I know what you mean.
I think if we were in a different market, it would be fun. But since we get almost 100 inches of snow, it becomes very challenging, because it's not like, you know, it's all or nothing. Sometimes we have a week where there's, you know, very, very little snow and everyone's like, you know, am I going to work? And then other times where, you know, all of a sudden we're doing, you know, 60 plus hours and, you know, people aren't resting appropriately, or, you know, it's a lot of stress. And then, you know, it takes a toll on everybody. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're in a different market, it would be a little bit more enjoyable, because then we'd be able to say, okay, you know, it's in moderation. But, you know, once it becomes, you know, all the time where it's 5 months straight, then I think that's where, because a lot of people break. But I do have to say, our director of operations, Brian, he absolutely loves the snow. Like, he gets so thrilled for it. So he's definitely, I'm so thankful to have him. And he definitely, like, he takes my plan and he does the same thing. He rolls it out. So he's made snow more enjoyable for me, because I have someone that's like, you know, cheering me on and like, you know, has my back and ready to go. And then he also can execute a plan just as strong and sturdy as I can, you know. So if I needed a few hours of rest, I can say, rest assured, Brian can take it and, you know, carry it on. So I think this year I'm going to really enjoy snow more, because we have a couple other people to help. So I think that'll ease some of the burden. I might say, I love snow again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is your role during the winter, or maybe during a snow event?
So I'm strictly like subject to the operations and management. Once in a while, if we have enough people, I go out and I'll plow snow, or I'll shovel or do something for fun. But typically in a night, like, I actually work best from home. I used to go and drive around, but I can't manage and drive. And then I used to be a passenger, but then I was like, I'll do better if I'm stay put at a computer. I can watch the GPSs. I can, you know, coordinate with employees. I can take phone calls. I'll usually schedule other dispatch, and we'll be like on a big group chat on the phone the whole time. So as a phone call comes in, you know, we execute and dispatch, you know, immediately. And then me and Brian will continue communicating. Sometimes we'll drive together and manage together, and we'll just kind of solely manage. And then if, you know, say if something happened, someone broke down, we'll kind of put the fires out. We always have those extra people So this way, you know, if someone needs a ride or someone broke down, someone needs salt or fuel, you know, there's people to kind of help with that or at least dispatch for that. So I'd say mainly, you know, making the game plan and executing and making sure everyone's serviced in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Okay, so no residential, no driveways, all commercial.
Correct.
What does that word commercial mean to you? Are you guys doing retail? Are you doing office buildings? Is it a big mix?
It's a pretty good mix. We have a lot of industrial, multi-use, definitely, you know, a handful of retail. We have some homeowners associations, you know, some banks. We try to be careful because, you know, certain entities do come with more liability, you know, nursing homes, homeowners associations and banks. Those all carry a little bit higher risk and liability just because of, you know, the structure, the clientele, things like that. So we do try to aim for, you know, certain clientele, like the industrial, the office parks. You know, multi-uses are nice because then, you know exactly what you're getting out of it. And then medical is nice because it's high demand and they usually do pay more for service. So, you know, we're not trying to, you know, get all clientele that is going to nickel and dime the budget.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask you a question here. I don't want you to give away any secrets, but are there any kind of special niche areas that you've discovered that maybe somebody listening might not be aware of?
I would say, I'd say industrial is nice. And the reason for that is no sidewalks mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
I think we're all experiencing the issue with like the labor these days. Mm-hmm. So more people are more motivated to work as an operator and be in a nice warm piece of equipment and sit behind a wheel. My take on sidewalk crews is they're super needed, but it's not a career. You know, no one's going to say, you know, I want to shovel snow for the rest of my life. Obviously, you know, most of our people that start as sidewalk people, you know, they grow into the sidewalk equipment mm-hmm. and then we progress them to the other equipment through training. But, you know, it's not like, you know, someone's so diehard, they're like, I'm going to shovel snow for the rest of my life. So it's hard to, you know, find those positions. So if we can get customers that don't require sidewalks, that's more ideal for us because A, we now have less liability. B, we don't have to worry about hiring, you know, a position that's more difficult to find. But it's also the clientele in industrial is nice because they're wearing the appropriate shoes. So they're wearing work boots. They're not, you know, coming in stilettos and loafers right. and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Okay. We're going to talk about people here in a minute, but I want to stay on my line of questioning about snow specific stuff. What about contract mix? Talk to me about how do you manage that balance between seasonal and per occurrence? And is there a big, like, kind of push in your market where all the property managers get together and, you know, all want a certain type of contract form, or how does that work for you?
Yeah. So mainly most of people want a seasonal contract because they know we get heavy winters. So we do have that like 10 to maybe 15% of per times for plowing. We have a good amount, I would say more than 30% of per times for like per salt, which is nice. So then, you know, we get what we, you know, it's, you get what you pay for, but mostly our seasonal contracts, they know it's an all you can eat buffet. So it's never ending service.
Sure.
But I will say this year, I've really, really pushed, me and Brian, I should say, I've really, really pushed the floor and cap idea because when we were looking through the average for the past couple of years, we've noticed it was more like in the 80 something inches. So then we're thinking, well, you know, there's times where we price ourselves too high because they want the set price. And, you know, it's like if we have it at an average of 60 to 80 times per season, but if we're only doing it 40 to 50 per times, then we need to adjust that. So we've actually adjusted a lower floor versus our floor being 93 inches. And we've actually acquired more customers because it's allowing us to be more competitive, but we're still going to get it's a win-win. So we win, the customer wins, so we can save them some money. like out of 5 years, let's say, you know, they might win, you know, two or three at a time. And then the other two or three times we'll get what we pay for if we have a heavy winter. So that's actually becoming more popular. And so much so, the idea of me talking about it over the past few years has inspired one of the developers in our area to do the floor and cap. Obviously, they have their own structure of it, but it's becoming more attractive because then you're still saving people money, you know, at least, you know, 30 to 50% of the time. And then this way, if you get a heavy winter, the companies aren't, you know, losing to a point where that could put some people out of business. So it's, I'm hoping this spreads more, but I'd say most of our stuff is still seasonal and it's, you know, the floor and cap seasonal. And then you still have that, you know, 20 to 30% of per times or different adjustments that, you know, are more attractive to that specific client.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just going to take time before the property management world adopts that model, but it really is the best model. And in fact, if I was a contractor today, that I would offer a limited seasonal contract and I would offer some retainer model of a per push, which would really be a limited seasonal light product. You know, and I've been on my soapbox for this for years. So it's inspiring to hear that you're seeing some success there. And just keep up the good fight, because that is absolutely the right way to approach it. So I love hearing that. What about technology? What kind of, is there any piece of software or any cool tracking devices or anything that you are really geeked about you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so we use tons of technology. I think that's something, sometimes I think we use a little too much. But one of my favorite things that we have is the Verizon Connect GPS systems in our equipment and our vehicles. Mm-hmm. So much so we've even put them on our trailers because you can never be too safe, but also it really documents the data. So we're seeing an increase in slip and falls because I think, you know, everyone is looking for something. I shouldn't say sure. Everyone, I'm sorry. You know, it's becoming more common for people to try to get these slip and falls. There's more claims being opened. So it's really helping with mitigating that risk for the contractors because snowplowing insurance is really expensive. And once you get a claim, even if it doesn't do anything, it's just open and closed, that still affects your insurance. But we've been communicating with our insurance companies with all the different technologies we've used. And they've actually, you know, worked with us and not hit us on increasing of rates because we're being proactive and we're making those adjustments like, okay, we have documentation from the GPSs that, you know, even the down to the loaders and the sidewalk pieces of equipment. So even a mower or like one of the Ventrax that we use or the little standers, we put the GPS on it. So we don't, if someone were to steal something, then we know where it is. But really the documentation of, you know, being there at this time for this amount of time, then they're like, okay, well, that's not even going to get turned into a claim because you have proof that you were there. And that all aligns with, you know, the level of service that you've given. And then also it helps with management. So this way, if I have 60 employees out in a night, and they didn't, let's say if they forgot to punch in, I'll see, okay, their equipment's on, I know they're in. Mm-hmm. So it's less phone calls we have to make. It just helps all in all. But the main thing that I love about it is it really is helping reduce that risk for the contractors, especially, you know, keeping our prices lower because it's already a competitive market. So we don't have to increase, you know, prices out to customers by increase of insurance from slip and falls.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. What about business management software?
So one of the main things we use is Google Drive. So we have Google Sheets and Google Mm-hmm. and Google Slides. And there's more pieces that go into this, but Google Drive is a very affordable way to keep track of our route list, our site map, a game plan for each night. And since it's cloud-based, you can hop on your phone, iPad, computer. I can be halfway across the world and still access it. It's very user-friendly. something we're trying to get away from that. But it's been such a great platform and it's very, very affordable. We are using Service Autopilot for trying to use it as like a CRM, but also dispatch. But it's, you know, still a work in progress because you have to build it from scratch.
Got it.
So what's nice is, you know, as if a customer calls in, we have it all on a database on a Google Sheet. Our routes, we have it all color coded, so we share it. So if someone has a Gmail, we share it to their email, or we create usernames, like a, you know, we have like a crew leader account, and then we just have everyone access that so they can just find the site maps so they know where to put snow. They can access the route sheets, any information like, you know, okay, I need to communicate with my crew that I'm working with. They'll see, okay, I'm working with, you know, Williams or Route 1 and this truck. And then it has like the phone numbers of all those people hosted on that. So we are trying to use Service Autopilot. It is definitely on the pricier side, but I think our function for it in the long run is for people to document. It's another documentation of, it's going to host site maps, but then it's going to dispatch the different routes or sites that person has to service. So as we continue to grow, and you know, something that I'm trying to do is start subbing work so we're not all self-performing, then it's a platform for subcontractors to use. So this way there's proof. So if I'm not able to, you know, have the GPS on their vehicles, then there's still data showing that we were there servicing it. Or, you know, say if I needed someone to use their vehicle, because we do hire some people with their own trucks once in a while, to have extras, then we can still have that proof using the system and having photo documentation, the little GPS breadcrumbs, but all the information will be hosted on there. So they know the hours of operation, the addresses, their route and things like that.
Yeah. And you're using that on the landscape side too, right?
Yeah. So we've been using it this year. There's a lot of, I think we're riding the learning curve on it, but we're actively working with Service Autopilot to try to continue building it with the automations and all the bells and whistles that it comes with. But it just, it, you know, it's a lot, you know, there's, we're literally building an app from scratch because you have to put in everything and it syncs with your QuickBooks. So there's a lot of work that goes into it for it to, I think, be successful. So I guess you guys will have to stay tuned and I'll give you feedback, hopefully mid or end winter of it.
Next time we talk. Yeah. I mean, any software application is going to take, you know, a good 2 or 3 years to really get it dialed in the way you want it. What about equipment? Are there any pieces of equipment, whether it's plows or de-icing or sidewalk equipment, that you're like really excited about to talk to us about?
I mean, we've been testing the liquids. So we invested in, you know, creating our own brine and applying it. I think it's something that we've really, I don't want to say we've mastered, but we've really started to understand it because in our area, you can't use it all the time. It's a very selective use, but it is nice because we're able to set ourselves apart from some of our other competitors in the area, I should say, because we do have, you know, the elite equipment. So it's kind of fun because there's times where, you know, instead of using over 20 tons a night, we're able to use probably an eighth of the amount because of how much savings are provided with the brine method, because you're not just pouring. And I think it all comes down to, you know, I want to save the earth, you know, one thing at a time. But I think it's really helping because then we're not over applying salt, because, you know, when you look at our lots, they get coated with white salt.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, if we're able to avoid having people complain about salt being packed in. So I think that's exciting because we've really started to master it and really explain it to other people and try to educate our area about it.
Yeah. So you have a brine maker, you make your own?
We do. Yes.
Okay. And then you have truck mounted applicators. So you're hitting parking lots and sidewalks?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Very good. Let's see, where do I want to go next? I want to talk about people. I said, we talk about people. Let's talk about people. How are you recruiting people for snow?
So we use Team Engine, which is a hiring software. Mm-hmm. It has been, we've been using it a year and it has been such a luxury. It is such a luxury of a software. It's a great tool. Definitely has a price tag to it, but it's great because it hosts everything all in one. So when you put out a job posting, it goes out to all the platforms for hiring, like Indeed, ZipRecruiter. It used to be hooked up to Facebook, but I think they're not partnered anymore. So this way you're not signing on to three or four different platforms to, you know, process people's, you know, resumes and things like that. It's all in one. And then it has the automation. So this way, if someone applies, it starts the conversation and gathers information. And then once you schedule an interview, it's automated. So this way it reminds them, and, you know, it's great because we've used to have a lot more no call, no shows. So it confirms. So, you know, I'm not now paying someone in the office to call and confirm and go through that whole story. And what's nice is everyone's on their phone nowadays, right? But they're not on their phone talking, they're texting. So it's an easier and faster way to communicate instead of through email. So now people are just texting like, hey, yes, or, you know, you're getting to know them, you're setting up times, and it's within minutes. You know, there's times so where, yeah. And because people prefer to text versus call now. And, you know, I don't know, most people, I mean, I check my email all the time, but, you know, most people aren't sitting on their email. So if they get a text, you know, you're now hiring someone instead of taking a week or two, it could be days.
Yeah.
And to fill our bench with 60 people for the winter, you know, it takes a lot less time than basically, you know, going and spending months hiring for, you know, positions.
Yeah, that's great. As you know, Team Engine is one of our sponsors. So shout out to Team Engine, teamengine.io. If you're not using Team Engine, I would highly recommend you do a free trial with them and check it out. So I'm glad you brought it up. What about retention? Talk to me about your culture. Like, how would you describe your culture, and what keeps people, how do you keep people engaged, and how do you retain people?
Yeah. So I would say our culture is very family friendly. It's very personable. You know, obviously we're not massive yet, so we're able to still know, you know, everyone's name, and, you know, I still work side by side, but with a lot of people. I would say it's very, very warm and friendly, and we communicate. So that's something I think is attractive, but also, you know, just we're not perfect, but we do have some pretty good structure, especially with the winter. I call it controlled chaos. So people like the idea, and they've complimented that, you know, even though it's very unpredictable, the winter, that we have a solid plan and we can execute a good plan, and that, you know, we allot enough equipment so people aren't feeling the burden. Obviously, you know, we're not perfect. So every night's not always perfect, because people call off. But I think just we try to take care of people, and we're starting to offer more benefits and different things to keep people around. So it's a career in long-term versus, you know, short-lived. So, you know, we've started offering, you know, paying into health insurance and a paid vacation and things like that, but also, you know, training. And, you know, I do have to, you know, shout you guys out again. We've invested in Grow the Bench. So there's different tools for our people to, you know, it's, people love the idea of learning and growing, especially if they're getting paid for it. So not only do we do, you know, the sessions with Grow the Bench, we've done the coaching as well, which has been really awesome, because then, you know, me, Chris, and Nick have learned how to work with people and, you know, use the Gallup strengths assessment and things like that to understand our people and where to put them in their strength zone. So yeah, that's been really great, because people love when you invest in them and that they feel like they matter versus, you know, I don't care, just get to work kind of thing. I think one of the things that I have to pride on is we lead by example, and people are actually starting to make more comments now than ever. Especially people that come into a management or a higher up position, that they're very shocked when they see the things that me, Chris, and Nick do, where, you know, in the retail, I'm not scared to cash someone out or, you know, lift an item or, you know, get my hands dirty. So I think, like, for me, I'll never ask someone to do something that A, I've never done, or that I'm not willing to do. So I take pride on still having that energy and that motto, because people want to work harder with someone. And I don't like to say work for me. I say work with me because we're a team. And that I think that, you know, this company is ours. It's not my company. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my people. So I like to make people feel like it's ours and we share it together versus, okay, you work for me and this is, you know, how it's going to be. I think it makes a difference of knowing people knowing that, you know, we're a team together versus me versus them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such a great leadership philosophy. I love all that. And I love what you said. You said, we're not massive yet. I love that.
That's your new tagline.
But you say that with humility, you know, and so I love what you just said there.
Thank you.
That's really cool. So I want to hear about your new speaking gig, because like I said, your name's popping up everywhere, and you know, you've been very involved in the industry, and you know, you've been a great supporter of Snow Fighters and Grow the Bench and Sima and all these different places. But talk to us about this. What are you speaking on? Like, what are your go-to topics?
So the last two topics were more of like marketing, and like it was a lot about like getting new customers, retaining customers, and hiring new employees and retaining them. So I would love to, and I want the opportunity to talk about operations, because that is like my forte. And I'll be honest. Obviously, this is public speaking at a national level is newer for me. So it's definitely been humbling. So I will say that. I know I'm going to get better over time. But I know the topic that I spoke on wasn't something that I do every day. I'm involved in, but I have a team of, you know, marketing, like a team of marketing people. And, you know, obviously, like the hiring and the customers, like that stuff is good. But it was almost like very like distinct, because when I spoke at the Lawn and Landscape Technology Conference, that was all, you know, tech based. So then I really had to hone in and focus on
how the technology
was for those specific things. So it's been going pretty good, but I think it is definitely humbling, because standing up in front of people is a lot different than, you know, kind of speaking like how we are behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely something that I think I want to get some advice on, because I definitely get nervous, and, you know, it might show, but I don't know. I think it's just I'm my worst enemy. But I would love the opportunity to talk about like snow operations and things like that, because that is, you know, I don't even need a script. I can just go on for 8 hours.
Sure. Right. Well, maybe we need to have a separate conversation privately about speaking, because I've, you know, obviously done a lot of speaking, and I have some tips I can share with you.
Love that.
and Neil probably does as well. But let's see. I want to kind of wrap things up here. Is there anything that you were hoping we were going to chat about that we didn't have a chance to get to yet?
No, I don't think so. I think you've hit a lot of really good topics.
Yeah. So you're, you know, I want to say from my perspective, you're still young in your career. You have a lot of road ahead of you still, and you're going to do some great things, because you're not massive yet. So we got to keep that in mind. But yeah. What are you really proud of? You mentioned a couple of things, but just maybe kind of sum it up. Like, tell us what you're most proud of that you've accomplished so far.
I mean, I'm proud of everything. Like, it's such a hard question to answer, because where we've started and where we've come, and business is a consistent challenge. So, you know, every day has a new challenge every year. And I would just say the fact that me, Chris, and Nick have always stuck together through the tough times, and we've just always adapted and overcome. You know, there's times where we just didn't know. You know, you just don't know. You're like, well, there's unknowns, there's roadblocks, but we just kept pushing through and we stuck together. And, you know, when one of us is having a downtime, the other one, like, that's what's nice, is there's someone there to pull you out. So I think that, you know, we've really come to master, you know, the industry standards and really giving a quality service and product out there that, you know, we're being nationally recognized. So I think that's really something to speak for, because if we're being recognized on a national level, that's a huge pat on the back. And we're just really thankful and opportunity that, you know, we're still not perfect because, you know, there's always something to learn and always something to do better. So we're just always willing to learn and grow ourselves and better our company to, you know, keep making progressions and attracting people and still want to, you know, jump aboard and help us take us to the next level.
Yeah, good. Well, that's a great place to end. So let's leave it at that. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us. This was great.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snow Fighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.